All right. Last week, we began our study on transgender issues. And basically, what I attempted to do last week is simply introduce us to the topic, familiarize us with the language that is used surrounding this issue, so that when we hear these various phrases and words in our culture, we'll understand how they're being used and know what people are talking about. With that in mind, today I want to begin by just sort of giving a brief history of transgender advocacy in our cultural context. In other words, I'm not going to try to look at every example of transgenderism in antiquity or anything like that. While that might be an interesting study, what I'm mostly concerned with is its rise in our own culture over the course of the last several decades, or, you know, certainly within my lifetime, kind of bring us up to, I want to do this in order to sort of bring us up to speed where we are, and possibly even give some thought to what direction we can expect things will head, given the current trajectories and things we see going on in places like Europe. Okay, after that, I want us to talk briefly about the philosophy that underlies the transgender movement and gives rise to it. Okay? So with that in mind, if we look back at, you know, most of history, Western history anyway, people had a biblical view of the world, and they had a scientific understanding of God's world. It was based on God's revelation. And you could see that when a baby was born, okay? A baby was born, the doctor, the midwife, whoever was assisting with the delivery would look at the anatomy of a baby and say, it's a boy or it's a girl. And they would assume that if it is a boy or if it is a girl, then that child would take on certain characteristics that were consistent with masculinity and femininity. Hence, there was like this binary description of the world. God created them male and female. And what the Bible taught was confirmed by science. Anatomically, we were different. And science later confirmed chromosomally we're different, hormonally we're different. And those chromosomes and hormones would result in differences in appearances, and would in general work their way out in certain behaviors and characteristics and traits that we would usually associate with gender. Now sometimes those characteristics might not, our views of masculinity and femininity may be obscured, and where we drew those lines might have been in error, but that was basically how people thought. Now, when ultrasound technology was developed, people were, for the first time, able to detect the sex and, therefore, the gender of the child in womb. Some parents chose to wait till they had the baby to find out, and others wanted to know. Today, frequently, people, you know, want to know in advance, and they oftentimes have parties now, gender reveal parties, as they're called, where you invite your family and friends over, and, you know, you have a cake, and inside the cake is either, you know, a white cake has been made with blue food coloring or pink food coloring. You cut the cake open and, you know, you reveal to family and friends you're having a baby boy or you're having a baby girl. In Mexico, they have piñatas and you bust the piñata and, you know, blue flower comes out or pink or whatever. Interestingly, there was an article just last Sunday in USA Today taking issue with gender reveal parties, because that is enhancing stereotypes. For many of these children, it said what they are will not be determined until later. So you can imagine, you know, the doctor delivering the baby and just handing the child, you know, to the parents, and we'll have to wait and see what it is. But the article said that these gender reveal parties, while perhaps well-meaning, are politically incorrect, that they are reinforcing binary stereotypes, and they should come to an end. They remarked on Pinterest, there's increasingly what people do with these parties is, you know, they find out, okay, the parents are having a boy or they're having a girl, and so then they go out to the store and they buy gifts appropriate to each gender. Rifles, not ruffles. Wheels, not heels. Okay? And, you know, that determines how you decorate the nursery and all that sort of stuff. Well, I point that out just to note that this is all, this whole notion that sex is binary is coming under attack. Okay? Increasingly we hear people speaking about being gender fluid and objecting to the notion that sexes are either male or female. One of the things they often like to bring up, as we mentioned last week, is the abnormality of intersex people who may have both male and female characteristics. Now, even, I mean, not characteristics, but biologically, they may have of traits of both. Even though that's a very small percentage of people, like advocates of abortion who appeal to cases of rape as a basis for promoting the necessity of abortion, so transgender advocates often like to bring up people who are intersex. And rather than seeing that as an abnormality that has to be corrected, it is used to tout the notion that sex cannot simply be reduced to male or female. Well, the reality is, again, besides for that being a very small percentage of people, and most of them identify as either male or female, transgenderism is such that there's no, it can't actually be associated with the intersex condition. Transgenderism, the sex is not in question. It's a boy or it's a girl. Okay? It's transgenderism occurs when the person does not identify with their given sex. They believe they are born into the wrong body. But they like to bring up this anomaly as a way to, you know, to further their agenda and get away from this binary conception of male and female and the accompanying gender characteristics that go along with that. Okay, and I said letter D here just to distinguish poor Guinevere posted an article on Facebook this week, fortunately one I'd been looking for, and she found herself being trolled by gender advocate, and I didn't engage in because I thought this may be a friend of hers, and I didn't engage, and she didn't even know her either. Apparently this woman was just, you know, signaled to whenever people post on gender issues. But she made this point. I want to just read this letter D. It says, traditionally the terms sex and gender have been distinguished, with sex referring to a person's biological makeup and gender to the roles and behaviors typically associated with masculinity and femininity. While distinctions in gender are sometimes stereotypical generalizations, increasingly gender is being seen more as a social construct or even a matter of choice. As a result, gender is today perceived to be a more fluid term which transcends the simple binary categories of male and female and their accompanying characteristics. Okay? So I do want to make the distinction between sex and gender, but I don't want to go so far as to say that sex has no bearing on gender. The Bible, God sees us as male and female, and it tends to see characteristics associated with those sexes, masculinity and femininity. Again, that doesn't mean that we will always draw the lines where they should be or that our culture will, and we'll talk more about that later, but God has made us differently, and it extends beyond our biology. It goes, you know, down to our soul. All right. You're not just, you know, biologically male or female. You are spiritually as well. Okay. So that's how people have historically thought. This begins to come under the attack in the 1960s. Surprise. What you see is in the 60s the beginning of the feminist movement in earnest, at the same time that the gay rights movement begins. And as I said last week, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. As pastors know, if there's two people in the congregation who don't like you, they will find each other. You know, there will be a fellowship of the grievance, you know, before it's over. That's going to happen, right? Well, the first wave feminists weren't really interested in LGBT issues or anything like that. They were about, you know, equal rights for women, but they had as their enemy the men in general. And there was still this concept of binary sexes, but along comes then the homosexual movement, and these two groups later found each other. And they had a common enemy, and so as time went on, by the time we get to the 80s and 90s, the LGBT movement sort of coalesce, lesbian, gay, bi, transsexual. As I mentioned to you before, I think it's only a matter of time before the B is dropped, because the notion of bisexuality continues to reinforce this binary distinction between sexes. It's, you know, a bisexual person may be attracted to male or female, and it's increasingly, we can't speak in those categories. There are, I read articles, high schools and colleges today are starting to do away with homecoming kings and queens. Instead of being like a homecoming king or homecoming queen, now they are simply called royals, because the concept of king and queen continues making those distinctions. Yes, Paul.
It's been a whole lot of years ago, but I was visiting a church with a wedding, and a female minister was talking about
It's in the church, yeah. Yeah, it's in the church. Wherever the culture's going, that's where the church thinks it needs to go as well. Okay? So, long story short, these groups kind of coalesced. And you may have seen back in January, there was the big, I'm not sure what it was, supposed to be a woman's march. I think it was an anti-Trump march. I'm not sure. But there was a whole lot of LGBT activists among that that woman's march. They do see sort of a common enemy in traditional white male patriarchy dominance in the West. Okay. And so, you know, the movement is underway. That's where we are. Let's look over to the second page here. Advocates of transgenderism then can believe that if you have a problem with this, then you're the one who needs altering. You are transphobic. Okay. Phobos is a Greek word for fear. And fear is, you know, it's considered an irrational thing to be afraid of people who are transgender. And it's now considered, in fact, the belief that there are two sexes, that people should remain from birth, is increasingly being thought of as a hate crime. And so just as now we have hate crimes on the books for discrimination against minorities like, you know, blacks and homosexuals, increasingly transgender people are included in that category. And the result of that is that educators from all levels of schooling, in beginning with little children, all the way up through you know, elementary, high school, colleges, etc., and in organizations, are being educated to make them LGBT friendly. One of our own this week had sensitivity training at work in regard to those issues. Fortunately, you know, I've not had to set in through some of that, but I know if you're in corporate America today, increasingly, there are meetings to make you LGBT friendly. I shared, you all saw, I trust the video, just produced by the ACLU, you know, IP with LGBT. I didn't know, you know, I sent that out and I'm halfway amused by it. It's clever and yet it's also seriously twisted. The one thing they left out, you know, they had the transgender woman there with the, coming out of the stall with the little, you know, facial hair and all that. The one thing they did leave out is a woman backing up to a urinal or something. That I would have paid to see. But anyway, you know, it's, now you can't get that image out of your mind, right? That's where we are, okay? And it's just, since I began this study, I mean, I'm just, every day almost, there's a new article on this issue. This week, the National Post, the Canadian magazine, did an article on the transabled, okay? Olivia first told me about this. She told me she had this in one of her humanities classes, but it was the first that I'd seen of it in a big publication. There's a new group of people called the transabled. They identify not as like being in the wrong body, but being disabled in when everything is fully functioning, their arms and legs. There's been several people who have staged accidents to dismember themselves. Cut off an arm, cut off a leg, fully functioning. And they started noticing this in Europe, where sometimes the person was not successful. And they would mangle themselves. They would mangle an arm. And then this one fellow, for example, after the third time, he finally managed to cut his arm off with a saw, because he identified as disabled. He had a sympathy for disabled people and he identified with them. And so he sought to dismember himself. And psychiatrists started knowing this or started noticing this, and they decided that we need to come out and and embrace these people and let them know it's okay, because one of them's going to hurt themselves by doing this. So if you want to be disabled, we can do that for you safely within the operating room. So if you suffer from this, then we can amputate your legs or your arms. But see, you can't do it in a sterilized way. I remember Olivia told me about this in one of her classes in college, and she couldn't help herself, and she said, "That's crazy." And the teacher said, told her not to judge, you know, these people. And so, it was at UK, so, you know, ask her who the professor was. Well, the transgender community is kind of, they don't like being identified with the transabled, because they feel that some of these people are using this as an excuse to get disability, because that's what would happen after this sort of thing. So it's kind of hurting their cause. Okay? So you see this, like I said, it's never ending. Okay? Let me just read letter G here. It says, under the guise of anti-bullying instruction, primary school children are being taught that sex is between your legs, but gender is between your ears, and they don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. In fact, taking the above to its logical conclusion, advocates go so far as to declare, if you identify as a man or somewhere on the masculine spectrum and find yourself pregnant, that does not make you a woman. Rather, you are a person who is pregnant. Okay? Now, that comes from a guide for young trans people in the UK. That's what's being taught in Great Britain into high school students. Okay? In the legal system, besides for hate crimes, as of 2010 in Britain, if you are diagnosed, you have to go to a doctor and be diagnosed as transgender. You have to have these feelings for 2 years. If you have those, then you can begin treatment. You can begin hormone treatment or have surgical alterations done to change yourself. You can have your birth certificate changed. And you know, any pronouns, titles, etc. used to refer to yourself change. Well, that has come under fire because it requires a medical doctor or psychiatrist to diagnose you. But see, if you're diagnosed by a psychiatrist, that gives the impression that there's something wrong with you. And so now the new movement is to update the Equality Act of 2010 to get rid of all medical requirements. All you have to do is go to the birth certificates are done and say, I want to change it. Already, if an employer asks you what gender or what sex you were at birth, then they can be fined up to £5,000 for doing that. Okay? So I tell you about what's going on there because I think that's coming here. Meanwhile, as I mentioned last week, many young people may go through a period of gender dysphoria where the article I'm going to share that later that Guinevere shared on Facebook talks about this girl who just grew up like a tomboy. You know, she played with the boys and she did those things. But later on, you know, she reached adolescence and she liked boys. She's still kind of a tomboy. She likes, you know, certain sports. It's, you know, she likes sports and all that kind of stuff. But she's attracted to men. And she talked about how beneficial it was that her parents, you know, didn't do like some others in the news, start helping their child transition. because the vast majority of people who ever do experience gender dysphoria will outgrow those feelings later in life. But what's happening now is if it's perceived that a girl is behaving in a more masculine way or a boy in a more feminine way, advocates are supporting children as young as 10 to 13 years old to undergo puberty suppression treatment. Okay? In other words, preventing the boy from, you know, achieving puberty, vice versa. Because if they do, changing later in life will be more difficult. Okay? So taking hormone therapy, etc., so that sex reassignment surgery won't be so traumatic later on. Okay? So that's where Europe is now, and that's where we're heading. All right? Let me, any questions or comments? Yes, sir. Are they what? I don't know. Well, that's the fallen world we live in. Okay. Do what? I can't hear you. Oh, different issue. Here we go. All right. Okay, so you know that just kind of brings us up to speed as where we're going. And again, I want to, you know, I want us to be aware of how crazy it is. At the same time, I want us to, you know, people who feel they're trapped in a wrong body, who suffer from this, I want us to have I want us to have sympathy for them, to help those who want to change, you know, in a biblical way, to know that there is help in the gospel. Okay, so let's keep that in mind. All right, so where does this all this come from? Where will we get the notion that a person may define their gender like they would anything else? All right, I'm going to give you a super short, overly brief kind of little lesson in Western philosophy over the course of the last 300 years. And I've kind of got some stuff mapped up on the board for people who want to listen. I'm going to kind of stick by the microphone. But throughout most of Western civilization, Christian theism was dominant. Okay, the Christian worldview described the world in which we live. Okay? And all this begins to change, particularly around circa 1700 with the so-called Enlightenment. It's a very biased term. The idea is that when people believed in Christianity, they were in the Dark Ages, and then they became enlightened. What happened in the Enlightenment was that instead of looking to Scripture to describe the world in which we live, man decided that he could make sense of the world on his own using science and reason. You can see how this emerged really because of a failure of the church. Really, the architect of the modern world, I think more than anyone else, is Rene Descartes, who famously said, you know, I think, therefore I am. And to understand Descartes, we have to realize he was a mathematician. Catholics and Protestants couldn't agree on things. They were killing each other. But he knew whether you were Catholic or whether you were Protestant, you could do math and you could agree. It was objective. 2 + 2 = 4. And so he sought to achieve some certainty. He'd come up with a philosophical system to discern truth that was as objective as, you know, the discipline of math. Something that Catholics and Protestants could agree on and not divide over. And he constructed a philosophy based on reason. You know what? He began doubting everything till he found one thing he could not doubt, which was that he was thinking. Thinking was occurring. He says, I think, therefore I am. And he constructed a philosophy based on reason. And so eventually what happened was that instead of looking to God and his word to make sense of the world in which we live, man, through his individual reason, could use the scientific enterprise and could discover truth about the world. And as time went on, you know, Christianity, religion in general, the supernatural, was seen as simply superstitious. You could understand how people in earlier, less advanced time could believe the biblical story, but man was making all sorts of advances in science, and now he didn't need that anymore. We can make sense of the world in which we lived apart from God. Now, Descartes and the early philosophers, they still believed that there was a God. But Christian theism gave way to deism, which was the belief that there was a God who created the world, who set it in motion, but then he didn't have anything to do with it anymore. So, for example, the miracles in Scripture are fictitious. All right? And so what happened with, you know, God, there was still an architect. Man really couldn't understand how a world could be created apart from a creator. And so there was still a God, but this God had very little to do with the world in which we live and, you know, in running it. Okay. He made it like a clock. He wound it up and now it's running itself. Well, it was only a matter of time before, you know, once God had lost his personality, it was possible to get rid of God altogether. And so what eventually developed was naturalism. Naturalism says that you know, there is no supernatural. The natural world is all that exists. If you can't see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, it doesn't exist. Okay? So naturalism got rid of God altogether. Now, when man got to this point where he could explain the world without any reference to God, he was originally very optimistic. Now that we've put off superstition, we're going to use our mind and use science, and we're going to make sense of this world. Okay? That goes on for a little while, and then some people began thinking through the implications of that. Friedrich Nietzsche was particularly the one who said, well, you know, if there is no God, though, then there's no meaning to human existence. Not only that, we can't really be sure that what we think we know that we actually know. Can we really trust our senses? I mean, our senses are electrical, you know, chemical impulses in our brain. I believe I'm touching this podium, but that's just, you know, my nerve endings sending signals to my brain. I remember my father-in-law, Bobby, after his legs were amputated, he fussed sometimes about his toes itching. He didn't have toes anymore. He talked about how frustrating it was because he just wanted to scratch one of his toes, but he didn't have them, you know, to scratch. You know, doctors used to call that phantom pain. They realize it's real today. Well, nihilists said we can't really know anything for certain. And if there is no God and we're all just cosmic accidents, we're nothing more than matter in motion, well, there's no morality. You know, morality deals with persons and choices and so forth. And so along comes nihilism. Well, no one could live with nihilism, okay? The statement, there is no meaning to human existence, is a meaningful statement, okay? It's at its core contradictory. And so what develops after this is what's known as existentialism. And this is really where I'm getting at. Existentialism was particularly promoted by Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus in their writings. And what existentialism is an attempt to answer or transcend nihilism. It is an attempt to give meaning to a meaningless existence. Existentialism affirms naturalism. There is no God. The universe is all that exists. Everything is just matter in motion. It affirms that. But it says this. With the evolution of human beings, a new kind of being developed. Okay? humans develop self-consciousness and self-determination. So rather than merely being an object which is acted upon, I am a subject that can act upon things. Okay? This podium, you know, this altar, it has legs, but it's not going to get up and walk out of here, right? I have legs and I can choose to do that because I'm self-conscious and self-determined. I am a subject, not an object. The subject is the part of the sentence that performs, you know, the action. The object is, you know, the recipient of the action. The boy hit the ball, etc. Or the thing acted upon, all right? Well, what happened is that matter became self-conscious. And so with the evolution of human beings, a new kind of being came into existence. And because we are now self-conscious and self-determined, then we can now define our own essence. All right? What we mean by that is this. The most famous phrase in existentialism is the one written on the board there. It says, existence precedes essence. What that means is this. We exist first. Only afterwards do we determine our essence. Now, ordinarily, if you're going to make something, you conceive of it in your mind. You get the essence of that thing in your mind. If you choose to bake a cake rather than make brownies, then you imagine in your mind a cake, and you imagine a chocolate cake, right? Because what other kind is there? But you conceive of that, and then you begin making that according to what you conceive. Okay? But that's not what happens. See, now, if there's a God, that's the case. If there is a God, you're an object. And he defines you. He defines who you are. He defines you as male or female. All right? But existentialism does not like that. That notion, okay, that you are an object. There is no God. And you exist first. You had no design. The universe hurled you into existence through time and chance acting on matter. Human beings develop self-consciousness. So you exist, and only afterwards do you define yourself, who you are, your essence. Now, the early existentialists just, they adapted that. What they said was basically, so now that, okay, it's true you don't come with any meaning, but you can make meaning for yourself by the choices that you make. You determine your own destiny. If you ever, the movie Forrest Gump, the screenwriter wove, he admittedly wove existential themes throughout the movie. And I always show this, I got an edited version of it I show to the kids every year when I teach on existentialism. If you think about the movie Forrest Gump, it's a really profound movie. It's all about life, and it touches on a lot of seemingly true things, because it asks the question, is life chance or is it destiny? At the beginning of a movie, there's this feather floating in the wind, and that the movie ends with that feather floating in the wind. And that feather is a metaphor for Forrest. Forrest is a person. He's not intelligent. He's just kind of always blown about. He does things by accident. He accidentally teaches Elvis to dance. He gives John Lennon the words to imagine. He uncovers Watergate plot. He ends up becoming a gazillionaire, more money than Davy Crockett. All these things happen to Forrest by chance. By contrast, he's surrounded by people in the movie who all have a destiny that they're pursuing. Bubba wants to be a shrimp and boat captain. Lieutenant Dan's going to be a war hero. Jenny wants to be a folk singer like Joan Baez, etc. And yet they don't achieve their dreams, and yet Forrest does. Okay? And so at the end of the movie, you know, he's asking the question. He's at Jenny's grave, and he says, I don't know if Mama's right or Lieutenant Dan, if, you know, life is like a box of chocolates, you know, it's all just chance, or we all have a destiny. But he ends in a contradiction. Maybe it's both. But the Bible recognizes sometimes the apparent absurdity of life. You know, in Ecclesiastes says the battle isn't always to the strong. The race isn't always to the swift. Time and chance happen to us all. The person most likely to succeed doesn't, etc. Okay? So it kind of recognizes this apparent absurdity, but it concludes in a different way. You know, ultimately God's in control, and you might not understand it, but fear Him, keep His commandments. But throughout that movie, Forrest says something. Somebody said, "You're stupid." And he says, "Well, stupid is as stupid does." That's just a layman's way of saying existence precedes essence. You're stupid depending on what you do. Ultimately, you define yourself. And the only thing you can really do wrong is living by the direction of others. And that's seen in the movie when Forrest takes off running one time. And he just starts running. He runs for miles. He runs to one coast. He runs to the other. Eventually, people find out about him, and they start running behind him. They think this guy's got it figured out. And this goes on for a long time, and all of a sudden, Forrest stops. And they're like, wait, he's going to say something. He's going to explain the meaning of life to them all. Forrest says, "I'm tired. I want to go home." And they're like, "Now what do we do?" Well, if you try to live by the direction of others, that's where you're going to be. Okay? So you don't do that. You define yourself. Existence precedes essence. All right? That's true not only of individuals, but postmodernism comes around. You define truth. See, without a God who defines truth, who's to say what is true and what is not? Each individual decides for themselves. Okay? That's the philosophy behind this. Okay? It's like, without a God who defines us as male and female, then we get to define ourselves. That's true not only of our gender, it can be our species, our ethnicity, you name it. Bottom of page 2 here, to give examples. Camille Paglia, who actually has some interesting things to say sometimes against second wave feminists, she expresses the sentiment this way: "I consider myself neither gay nor straight, neither male nor female, neither human being nor animal." Next page, 2. Radical feminist Judith Lorber longs for the day when all gender distinctives have disappeared, because only then will men and women be socially interchangeable and equally real. And when that happens, there will no longer be any need for gender at all. As long as we think in these binary categories, people are going to be oppressed. So we got to be completely equal in all things. The freedom to define oneself is not limited to gender. Civil rights activist, and you all know about this, was in the news, Rachel Dolezal, made headlines for identifying as black, when in fact her parents later revealed she was actually white. Here she was head of NAACP, or one of the chapters in NAACP, and her parents came out and said, she's white. And, but she, as she explained, she actually identified as black. Okay? I heard Rachel's falling on hard times now because they won't let her, you know, head up the NAACP anymore. Norwegian woman made headlines for claiming she had been born in the wrong species because she believed she had the sensory powers of a cat. A man in Great Britain spent $50,000 making himself a genderless alien. Okay? A prominent slogan expresses the attitude above like this: anatomy isn't destiny. In other words, not even our bodies are allowed to define us. As a result, whereas in earlier times a person suffering from gender dysphoria would attempt to conform their mind to accept their biological anatomy, in recent times it is now the body that is treated through medical interventions such as hormone therapy or surgical procedures, so that it conforms to a person's sense of identity. There's the thing. Here's what I want to say. And I do want us to be sympathetic for people who suffer from gender dysphoria. Historically, if a person felt like they were trapped in the wrong body, you would be counseled. You would undergo therapy to try to bring your thoughts in line with your body. Okay? You are biologically a man. You need to accept the characteristics of masculinity, work towards that. Now it's the other way around. You alter the body to even with transabled people, to fit with your mind. Okay? That's what transgenderism is about. Imagine, if you will, doing this with someone who's anorexic. Okay? Imagine you weigh 95 pounds, but you look in the mirror and all you see is 300 pounds. And you go to the doctor, and instead of the doctor trying to get the person to recognize, no, you're actually very thin, you are harming yourself, the doctor says, well, let's schedule a liposuction. And you weigh 95 pounds. You would kill the patient. Right? But that's the equivalent of what's being done. Okay? But there is a logic to it. And that's what I want us to see. If there is no God who defines us, who's made us male and female, then we get to define our gender, our race, etc. Now there are limits to that. I'll send you out a link to the guys. There were a couple guys went to University of Texas campus, I think, and they interviewed students, and there was a guy, about a 5'9" white guy or whatever, and he asked these students, he said, if I told you I was a woman, what would you say? And they were like, okay, yeah, no problem. And so you wouldn't have a problem with that. Everybody was kind of like, yeah, that's fine. And he said, what if I told you I was Chinese? Some people were like, not too sure about that. Other, okay. What if I told you I was 6'9" Chinese woman? And then you started seeing people become extremely uncomfortable with his, you know, how far he was taking it. He was sort of reducing it to the absurd. I want to see the men's basketball team, the UK's basketball team, all come out and identify as women and women, and then walk onto the women's team, dominate the NCAA in UConn's, what, 3 years they've not lost a game or something, in their dominance, and see how long this craziness lasts. You know, but I don't know, you know, what will it take? Okay. In summary, whereas in the past people believed God had established the sexes in the beginning, the dominant worldview of our culture denies we are created by God. Since we are not created by God, we are free to define ourselves and determine our own destinies. The result is now you are told that the right thing to do is to be yourself. The corresponding moral absolute is to affirm everyone else's right to be themselves. Okay? That's where we are, really. And you can see how at the root of this is really a rebellion against the Christian worldview and God defining us as male and female. We get to determine good and evil for ourselves. We get to determine gender for ourselves, etc. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Authority, not God. We define ourselves. Ben?
How do they look at interpretation? I mean, as far as in this transgender world, we want to be something here. I mean, how do they address that? I mean, like, for instance, in the homosexual world, you know, of course, there's an appropriation there, other than outside of that culture.
Yeah, well, that may be normal, but not necessarily normative. So most people will, their gender will identify with their sex, and they will continue to reproduce. But they would say, you know, you can't assume that just because that's normal, that therefore it's normative, that's what everybody must do. Okay? That's what most people may do, but for some people who identify as transgender or whatever, then they can't do that. But that's why, you know, there are means to help. You know, sometimes people a man and a woman can't reproduce. They can't procreate. And no one wants to say they're less than human because they don't have children. And so in the same way, they would argue that. It is from a biological perspective. If you, from a secular perspective, it is biologically deviant. Anything that doesn't promote the survival of the species is going to be biologically deviant. But again, that kind of requires some consistent thinking there.
Can I?
Yeah. Can you go up to
a dyke of a woman that wants to be a man, the dominant partner in the relationship, and takes on all the male attributes of, oh, so then you're just a male chauvinist pig, right?
I don't know. I guess you could. There was a diversity officer at a woman's school. There's a woman's college where there's a transgender woman who's going there. No, how is that? No, there's a transgender man going there to the woman's college. She wanted to be the diversity officer, but because she transitioned to a white male, they would not consider her to be the diversity officer there.
It's like, it just doesn't make any sense. It's like, even if they're not assuming roles, they're assuming roles
You find that so often in the couples. There continues to be. You look at Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. Ellen DeGeneres wears the sport coats, and Portia de Rossi wears the pretty dresses. They still tend to do that. But again, there's movement away from that altogether, to be completely gender fluid, to be able to go in and out of these genders if you so desire. Well, again, you know, I want us to consider how we can present the gospel to people, you know, in this way. I do. It's hard not to, you know, read this stuff and just kind of shake your head. And the Bible does call it an abomination. And so there should be a repulsion. But I also want us to say, okay, how do we minister to a world gone mad?
You're going to answer that?
I'm going to try.